Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to Bugle issue 124 for the week beginning Monday, the 23rd of August 2010, with me, Andy Zaltzman, here in the renowned Scottish city of Edinburgh, the city where angels fear to tread, albeit only during August for fear of being mistaken for a student theatre group doing a new hip-hop musical about the conception of Christ entitled God Pimping. And a little way away as the crow flies, but probably reachable in one go if you blasted yourself up the Royal Mile in a space rocket and ricocheted off Edinburgh Castle into a low orbit, in New York, it's the multiple Grammy Award-winning country music legend, Willie Nelson. Oh, sorry, I'm getting my podcast mixed up, so I thought this was Financial and Bedroom Tips with Willie Nelson. Sorry, it's the Bugle, isn't it? Anyway, it's John Oliver.
Hello, Andy.
Hello.
Hello, Buglers. Financial and Bedroom Tips, Andy.
Yeah, well, he's, you know, he likes to multitask.
That is two job skills that should never be merged.
But you'd listen to it. You would listen to that
podcast.
I'm not
denying that. That is a good point. That's a good point. Andy, I was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin for the last couple of days, shooting something for the show, and about 20 minutes after getting into my hotel room the first night, there was a knock on the door, and a hotel employee was standing there with a bottle of champagne and an ice bucket with strawberries inside the glasses, and a card that simply read, "The Milwaukee Division of the Bugle Army has your back." Then there was a drawing of a heart, and underneath simply signed, "Gaddafi." What? What a fantastic thing to receive. With the way the world is, Andy, flooding in Pakistan, fires across Russia, serious threat of a double-dip recession, it truly restores your faith in humanity that people are doing something that juvenile for one another. Thank you very much, Buglers, whoever you are. Unless it was actually Colonel Gaddafi who is currently heading over the Milwaukee Division of the Bugle Army. Also, I have to say, while I was in Wisconsin, Andy, I had my first ever bowl of cheese soup.
That sounds unholy.
Well, it is among the more ridiculous things that I've put inside my face, Andy. It's basically the cheese sauce poured over cheap nachos, but with the chef forgetting to put the nachos underneath. The first spoonful was confusing, the second nauseating, and the third, I think, legally qualifies as a suicide attempt.
What cheese are they using it?
Well, I don't think it's cheese of this earth, Andy.
All right, I see.
Yeah. I think it's laboratory cheese.
Mouse cheese.
Yeah.
Freshly churned from the whaps of mice. I've had several Buglers coming to my show in Edinburgh, thanks very much. A curse upon the rest of you, as previously stated. And one guy came along, he'd made a special T-shirt, John, with a picture of the famous Wang on the Roof from Bugle issue 69.
That's a conversation starter.
Yeah. So that was his own Bugle merchandising.
That's great.
Outstanding T-shirt. I mean, that's Wang on the Roof deserves to be commemorated in any way possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Imagine being the person who drew that Wang on the Roof. And seeing someone walk down the street with that, though. You know, it'd be a mixture of confusion and just deep pride. I knew it. I knew I'd done the right thing drawing that massive Wang on a roof.
I don't know what he's going to do next. I guess he's in that, you know, traditionally difficult second roof phase of his career. He's going to have to come on. You know, he's going to get slammed, whatever he does.
Yeah.
Whatever he does.
Yeah. You know.
So this is the Bugle for the week beginning the 23rd of August 2010, meaning that it is now exactly 200 years since the day that Napoleon, the prominent France-based battle aficionado, first hatched a plan to replace military conflict with a dance-off. He wrote in his diary that day simply, "I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it." But the Russians wouldn't go for it, John, because they didn't think the judges would like their Cossack legs in the air shtick. And they reckon that relying on the brutal Russian winter would give them a better chance of victory. And it's also 50 years since the same date 50 years ago, coincidentally. Doesn't seem that long since then, does it? But on this day in 1860, the famous decade, the 60s, was officially launched. It was nearly 8 months late due to a number of reasons, including the distribution company going into liquidation, meaning that the decade could not be delivered until midway through June. Strike action, which meant that February 1960 was never finished, and March 1960 was too dangerous to be used on the public. And illegal action by the 50s, which prolonged that decade by more than 6 months. In the bin, as always, a section of the Bugle going in the bin this week, a home lighting section, including how to fit up your living room with powerful floodlighting so you can jokingly interrogate your friends when they pop round for tea. Why are you here? It can't just be for a chat. What's the real deal, big horse? And also, how to save time switching lights off by wearing a blindfold. In the bin.
Top story this week, democracy own goal! As I think everyone in the world knows, Andy, the Brazilian presidential election is on October the 3rd. I, for one, have been counting down the days in the traditional way. I've had an advent calendar tattooed on my chest, and I have removed every morning until I'm just left with the central tattoo of Pelé doing a wheelie on a motorbike while playing keepy-uppy with a rolled-up ballot paper. Everyone has their own way of watching the Brazilian election results come in, Andy. Some like to invite their friends around, use a compass to make sure they face their TV in the direction of Rio de Janeiro. Some like to take the more traditional approach and shave their bodies, paint them gold, adorn themselves with feathers, and then walk up and down the middle of their street in a one-man drunkle carnival before waking up the next morning and just guessing the results. Or maybe you're more like me and you just phone Rivaldo on the hour, every hour, and ask him if he's heard anything yet. But the big story, the big early story in Brazil, is that satire has been banned there from now until election day. A draconian law still inexplicably there 25 years after Brazil's dictatorship ended has gagged anyone from mocking politicians on TV or radio for the next 6.5 weeks. Now, obviously, as soon as we heard this, Andy and I recognised it immediately as a cry for help. It was like the bat signal, or in this case, the bullshit signal, being projected into the sky, which is why, as an act of entirely selfless charity, we will be donating the top story this week to Brazil by lampooning the shit out of their election for them.
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's interesting, isn't it? The government banned satire in Brazil in the lead-up to elections. In Britain, that self-same role is performed by TV commissioners. Is this on? Is this on? And by this I mean my career. So, this anti-joking law is an odd thing. I mean, I have had audiences in the past that thought I was working under the same restriction. Not this year. Not this year. It's been a strong show. Strong show. Don't internally heckle me, most of you. Right. But I want to, you know, we had a similar, well, an interesting thing, actually, a show we were working on years ago, John, the state we're in.
Yes.
The rightly cancelled state we're in.
Yes.
On BBC Three, back in the days when you were still just a humble Brit before you became an American. And in the build-up to the Iraq War, we were working on this, and I remember writing some jokes criticising the actions of the British and American governments and being told by a senior commissioner at BBC that if we made anti-Bush jokes, we also, for the sake of balance, had to make anti-Saddam jokes as well. Now, you would have thought we could have taken that as a given.
Well, no.
You know,
no. No, you can't take that as a given.
Right.
You can't.
Evidently
do that,
not.
Unless you explicitly zing Saddam, they just assume that you were a Ba'ath Party supporter.
But we at the Beagle, we do take our responsibilities very seriously, John, and this world isn't going to satirise itself, is it? Mm. So, yes, as John said, we will be lampooning the Brazilian election.
Now, one of the reasons why this is going to be so painful for Brazil is that the candidates sound incredibly boring. The front-runner, Dilma Rousseff, has apparently a lumbering speaking manner, and her main opponent, José Serra, is widely considered to be lacking charisma. Now, have they found the only two introverted Brazilians in the whole of that bethonged nation, Andy? Is that what happens in Brazil? If you're boring, everyone else makes you run the country while they're outside building 35-foot floats out of marshmallows.
Have you ever been to Brazil, John?
No. Well, I'd love to. Marshmallow floats sound amazing.
Yeah, you just don't want to eat one in a whole one in a single sitting. That's the key.
So, here we go, Chris. I hope you've unpacked your drum kit and hi-hat, because this shit is about to get zingy. First, let's deal with frontrunner Dilma Rousseff. Here goes. For a start, what kind of name is Dilma? Sounds like Fred Flintstone calling his wife while suffering from a cold. Boom! Boom!
Chief of staff, more like. Boom! You heard her talk. She sounds like an articulated lorry slowly reversing onto a rhinoceros.
Here's another. Hey, Dilma, You're a career civil servant never elected to office. Plus, you are and will continue to be in the pocket of President Lula da Silva. I'm not saying you're a puppet. I'm just saying I bet you can't speak while President Lula is drinking a glass of water. Boom!
I know why she's called the Iron Lady, because she makes everyone she talks to feel flat. Flat, like they've been ironed. Iron. Can't handle the truth!
By the way, Dilma, Angela Lansbury called. She wants her entire wardrobe back. I mean, every item of clothing she's ever worn.
Former Secretary of State for Energy. Well, she should be fired. Fired. Is this on? I'm Dynamite.
Hey, Dilma, apparently you joined the underground resistance movement during a military dictatorship and were jailed and tortured between 1970 and 1972. That's an admirable commitment to your beliefs and cause. Hey, they can't all be winners.
What do you get if you cross four decades of political activism with a president who's coming to the end of his second term of office?
What?
Dilma Rousseff running for president. Okay, that needs a bit of work as well, John. That needs a bit of work.
Okay, well, let's move on to Jose Serra, Andy. Apparently, Jose Serra, Andy, was an engineering student. It's a shame he didn't engineer himself a personality. You're welcome, Brazil. De nada.
Jose Serra? Who's he, Serra, more like? Former health minister, is he? Well, he didn't make me feel any better this morning. I tell you, Brazil would be nuts if they elect this guy.
Hey, Jose Serra, your wife, Monica Allende, was a top ballerina with the National Ballet of Chile. Well, you can both go spin on this. Jose Serra's campaign slogan is Brazil can do better. You're right, Jose, and Brazil can do a f*** of a lot better than you. That is a burn. That is a third-degree burn all over his personality.
That man has the charisma of a long-forgotten apple core slowly rotting in a disused air raid shelter.
Finally, let's deal with the outsider, Andy, former Environment Minister Marina Silva. Marina switched from the Workers' Party to the Green Party a year ago. I haven't seen such a huge party hopper since Paris Hilton was welded onto a pogo stick. Brazil, you've been great. I'm here all week. Try the polenta.
Isn't that more of an Italian thing?
Apparently, it's also in Brazil.
I associate it more with those kind of little crusty pies. Mm-hmm. Little enchilada type things.
Really?
I don't know. Yep.
Are you thinking of Mexico, Andy?
Well, you know, they all love an overhead kick. That's the important thing. So the main candidates are Rousseff, or to give her Brazilian football style one-word moniker, Politiquinha, and Serra, or Stinkerinho. That's what he was known at school anyway, due to his carrying his lucky mackerel in his pocket wherever he went. But that clearly worked. Other fringe candidates, for the sake of balance, include Ignacio de Pileno from the Make Brazil Brazilient Party, policies including forcing all people over the age of 50 to emigrate to Norway and turning all schools in Brazil into juggling academies. Might not be good for the economy long term, but everyone loves juggling. Also, Carvalhita da Pluga, the 17-year-old nun who became an overnight TV sensation after rapping the Eucharist at halftime of a crucial World Cup qualifier against Ecuador, then dressing up as a holy wafer and trampolining herself into the goal. Brazil came back from a goal down to win the match. And also Tony Blair, the former UK Prime Minister, brings a lot of experience to the table. Brazil, obviously, we discussed this actually on a Bugle a while ago, I think, that in 1959, a rhinoceros ran in an election in Brazil.
I can half remember that.
Oh, I think we did. Anyway, maybe we didn't. Well, it rang a bell for me. But also, in 2008, there were some local elections, and six candidates changed their name to Barack Obama. There was one Chico Bin Laden. More than 200 candidates renamed themselves after the president, Lula da Silva, who had an approval rating of 80%.
Oh, very wise.
There are also candidates named after animals. There was Cattle Anna, the elephant without a tail. Also, the German in the lorry. Kitchen utensils, Big Charlie Knives, and the Golden Fork.
What? None of this is true. No.
It's true.
No.
It's on the internet, John. Also, there was a Bill Clinton. There was a DJ Saddam, Chico Bin Laden.
DJ Saddam?
Yeah. Also,
Kung Fu Fatty and the Second King of Prawns. These people don't take democracy seriously, John.
Kung Fu Fatty and the Second King of Prawns.
That was a band I was in at school.
Why is that not president? They are not a serious nation.
No. Well, that's scars, you know. I blame the 1958 World Cup team. They just set the bar too high. Oh. 100 days news now, and the coalition government in Britain has lasted 100 days, which is 99 more days than some sceptics thought it would last. 100 days, John, and the response of the British people so far can be largely summed up with one of three noises. Either A, B, or C. which is a contrast with the previous, the Labour government, the history of the Labour government over 13 years, the noise of which can be summed up as this. Ooh, yak, yak, yak. And the Obama so far, can be summed up as, yeah, hey, woohoo, woo-hoo, woo-hoo, This is a new line for me, John. I've been using words for too long. It's holding me back.
That's it.
I'm not going to get on telly until I start doing more noises.
There's always been an obsession in politics with judging people on their first 100 days. But is it fair, Andy? Because if you judge Jesus on his first 100 days, he was a huge disappointment. Yeah. For someone brought into this world being trumpeted as the Son of God and promising to be the saviour of mankind, he said nothing in those 100 days but incoherent gurgling and spent most of his time vomiting and shitting.
Yeah. Worst a bit anticlimactic. Saviour ever. After the whole three wise men caboodle, which is a pretty impressive start, mostly just involved his stepdad complaining about stuff and saying, well, he doesn't smell magic right now, love. First 100 days of Genghis Khan. He got an absolute slamming in his local press in Mongolia. This from the Ulaanbaatar Gazette. Genghis has thus far been indecisive and seemingly unwilling to take the difficult decisions that his people demands he takes, such as commencing a murderous rampage across the whole of Asia and Europe.
Twitter update now, and quietly, Andy, and without fanfare, Twitter was joined by a new intriguing member this week, North Korea. Almost every single citizen of North Korea is going to be unable to read the tweet, so the big question was, what are they going to use it for? And the answer came back pretty quickly, and it was twofold. One, basic propaganda. Two, talking smack about South Korea. Because so
talking far, smack, John?
Yeah.
What? Is this more of your stateside talk? Talking smack?
Yeah. I like. I think that's a quality phrase. Talking smack.
It sounds like sort of a wrestling name of a particularly aggressive babysitter.
Well, the talking smack is here. She doesn't hit you, but it feels like it. So far, North Korea have tweeted calling South Korea poor whore, also a dirty whore, and also a prostitute. So, variations on a theme from the Democratic People's Republic. It'll be interesting to see if they're able to expand their insults beyond implications that the country of South Korea is a professional sex worker of questionable job merits.
Yeah, why would they, John? John Coltrane did jazz, variations on jazz. Uh-huh. Why should North Korea branch out from calling South Korea a prostitute? It's what the fans have come to expect.
Well, maybe they'll just evolve into some reappropriated Yo Mama snaps, Andy. Hey, South Korea, your army is so weak, if it beat an egg, you'd give everyone medals. Oh, shit. This follows off the back of last month when the country's government also opened a YouTube account, uploading 78 news clips in 4 weeks. It's basically what you'd think. So far, news reports deny North Korean involvement in torpedoing the South Korean Navy ship. Some video montages of Kim Jong-il doing stunts going down his water slide set to music labelled Kim 6 Slide Tricks. And the rest is just cats on pianos playing music to honour the great leader. So It's as you'd think.
South Korea's hit back by saying that tweeting that North Korea is a bit of a dick. So this one could run and run. But this is politics returning to the age of school toilet graffiti. Uh-huh. John, perhaps even further back, to a time when writing stuff was hard work, when you had to carve it into bits of stone, which is pretty tough work. It's no wonder people kept finishing what they'd written and thinking, "Youch, I've got nasty cramps in my arm from all that chiselling. This had better get an audience. Tell you what, I'll pretend God said it." And South Korea has banned the feed from North Korea. It's blocked it on the grounds that it contains, quotes, illegal information. Information, John. This suggests that South Korea is admitting that it is a prostitute. It's not on the grounds of false accusations. Illegal information. They just don't want it getting out, John. It can't be public domain.
Some of the postings by North Korea are pretty weird, while others are, you know, unintentionally hilarious. One headline was tweeted as, "New speed of great advance created in DPRK," and it linked to this story, which this is a direct quote. "An unfathomable mental power of all the people has erupted like an active volcano, and a new standards and records stirring the era are being created in an unbroken chain in all sectors of socialist construction on the crest of the surging tide of the 150-day campaign in the DPRK." I don't know what that means. It's like a poem.
It's like a crossword clue, John. I think it's an anagram.
Other tweets in recent days included intensified anti-imperialist struggle calls for and US invariable ambition for world domination flayed. I do hope they're going to use Twitter to let people know of their nuclear tests by simply tweeting bang and big bang. Bang!
Did you know, John, Kim Jong-il's full first name is actually Kimberly?
So, and
apparently, the singer Pink collects portraits of Kim Jong-il. She's got 165 portraits of Kim Jong-il. And four times last year, she sneaked into North Korea under cover of darkness and stole a massive 50-metre-high portrait of Kim to go in her garden. And she even actually tried to commission her own portrait of Kim Jong-il from the celebrity portrait painter Rembrandt, unaware that he had tragically died 340 years ago. But only the best for Pink, and she wept her pink tears away from her pink face. And phoned the next best portrait guy instead, Franz Hals. But unfortunately, she got this message. "Hi, this is Franz Hals's answer phone. Thanks for calling. I cannot either take your call or undertake any portraiture commissions due to having died in August 1666. But if you leave a message, I'll call you back as soon as I feel better. Bye." Poor old Pink. "Oh," she said, "I can't believe both Rembrandt and Hals are both dead. What are the chances of that happening statistically? You'd have thought one of them would have made it. Take Elvis Presley and Paul McCartney. One out of two. Or take me and Avril Lavigne. Two out of two. I guess that just goes to show how dangerous portrait painting can be." Hals died 26th of August 1666, John. I just hope he wasn't doing an Edinburgh show that year, because he'd have popped it just before the last weekend. That's when the big numbers really turn up. Tough break. Rembrandt, he died in October 1669. Just 3 and a bit years afterwards, meaning that he is only 99.1% as dead as Franz Hals. But he is catching up, slowly. Will he ever overtake Hals? Well, it's not looking good with the way time works, bitch. What? Got all you talking about. Sorry, it's been a long month, John. I miss my kids. I miss my kids.
What time of the night did you write that, Andy?
It's probably best I don't say. Bugle free gift now, and, well, what a gift this is, John. This is the gift that all buglers really dream of having. It's a piece from my 2001 Edinburgh Fringe show. Andy Zaltzman versus the Dog of Doom. The Dog of Doom, of course, played on the offstage mic by a very promising young British comedian, John Oliver.
That's right. I was the voice of that dog, Andy. Yeah. Dog in a box.
A show seen by less than 6 million people over the course of the month in Edinburgh.
Quite significantly less than that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm probably not even less sure it was seen by more than 600 people.
Well, it did okay in the last week. You know, I picked up. I was getting a solid 20s in the last week. but buglers, in covering up for the fact that I've been a bit busy and haven't written much stuff this week, I thought I'd give you as a free gift the famous Francis Bacon sketch from the 2001 Fringe Show. In 1626, the animal kingdom struck a blow when Francis Bacon, the prominent statesman and philosopher, died whilst shoving snow up a hen's arse. This is essentially a true story. He was conducting an experiment to see if he could freeze a chicken. So I guess we should be grateful to his entrepreneurial spirit, John, because we now have freezers which do that for us. But is one man's life really a price worth paying for a healthy frozen food industry? Yes, it is. But dying while shoving snarp a hen's arse is a pretty humiliating way to go in anyone's language, and it must have been particularly upsetting for his wife, who, for the purposes of this sketch, will be represented by me. Francis, your dinner's ready.
Wait up, love, I'm shoving snow up a hen's arse.
Oh, do be careful, dear, you'll catch your death of cold.
Don't be ridiculous, love, I'll be fine. Oh, no, you were right, I have died.
Oh, Francis, you are a silly twerp.
I bet I should have listened to you. Never mind, people will still remember me for the brilliance of my philosophical writings, won't they?
No.
What, but my illustrious if checkered career in politics will ensure my continuing fame, won't it, pet?
No.
Do you think people will believe that I wrote Shakespeare's plays?
No. They'll just remember you as the man who died shoving snow up a hen's arse. You know what the gutter press are like.
Yes. I suppose when choosing between one newspaper that says leading philosopher dies aged 64 and another easier to hold one that says man dies shoving snow up a hen's arse, pictures pages 3-9, plus my chicken's arse stuffing hell, exclusive pages 12-18, most people will choose the latter. I know I would. Darling!
What is it, love?
Can you bury me, please?
Of course I can, love. Where did you put the spade?
Oh. Oh, no. It's in the horse.
Oh, Francis, you didn't.
Sorry, love, I got a bit carried away. Don't worry then, pet. I'll just putrefy slowly on the lawn. Bye then, love. Thanks for everything.
And there we go. The award-nominated bacon sketch.
Why Andy did, you know, a series of jokes and then sketch regarding Francis Bacon. Why did that not capture the imagination of the Edinburgh Festival comedy public?
I don't know, John.
Yeah.
I don't know. Of course, Francis Bacon, not the last man to die due to the animal kingdom. More recently, Kurt Cobain actually died whilst hunting a stag, which ran into his mouth. Bugle feature section now, and golf courses on massive rivers. A golf course, John, is being built. Has been built in the Amazon. In Peru.
Why not, Andy? Oh, I guess there are absolutely thousands of ecological reasons why not. But please carry on.
Yeah, and it's basically it seems to be sort of deep in the jungle and pretty much inaccessible. Mm-hmm. So you know, it's not going to pick up a lot of passing trade. Although I have always thought of the Amazon River as one of the world's trickier water hazards. And the Sahara, well, that is a bunker you just don't want to get stuck in.
The website says, welcome to the Amazon golf course, Iquitos, Peru, last outpost of civilization. Surrounded by rivers and rainforest, Iquitos and the Amazon golf course are the most remote adventure golf destinations. Words adventure and golf cannot be allowed that near each other without a full stop between them. The Amazon golf course is pay and play golf for $25 for 18 holes, including 12 balls, clubs and machete. What the fuck? When you know you are playing somewhere, you know, which is not a traditional golf zone, when there is a machete in your golf bag, Andy.
Yeah. Does that count as one of the clubs? Because you're only allowed 13 clubs in your bag, aren't you? So yeah, you know, what are you going to drop out? Yeah. Your lob wedge?
I know, but that's the thing, though, Andy. I mean, you don't want to need a machete and have to pull out a putter.
Yeah.
Apparently, vice versa, really. Yeah, that is true. Apparently, the water traps are populated with piranhas. Caimans, reptiles much like the crocodiles, tend to walk around the course and sun themselves in the sand traps, and the occasional red-tailed boa constrictor has been chased off the grounds by crew. So, you know, it's, I guess there's probably extra drops you could do there. Maybe if you've got a boa constrictor in the lie of the ball, they'll give you a two-club-length drop for that.
Yeah. Maybe a two-snake-length drop. I don't know. Well, then I guess you'd have to uncoil the snake to see how long it was.
That's very dangerous. Yeah. That's what the machete's for, I guess, in case the snake gets a little angry.
Yeah. Of course, this is not the first ever golf course in the Amazon. They did actually play a PGA championship there in back in the 90s. And here's a little snippet of commentary from it.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
So here's Duffy Waldorf at the 13th. He's gone a bit left into the heavy rough here, Mike. Some pretty thick undergrowth down there, but I think it's lying okay, and he's going to take a cut at the green with his 7-iron. Bit of a left-to-right breeze on this one. This is not an easy golf shot, Mike. Oh, no, he's been eaten by an alligator.
Well, Bill, that just shows you have to keep the golf ball on the fairways on this golf course. You go offline, you get punished. Over and out of Freddie Couples on the 11th. Jeff, how's Freddie getting on?
Not well, Mike. He's just drunk a hallucinogenic potion brewed from the bark of a local tree, and now he's lying on the floor clutching his stomach, vomiting and thinking he's an evil spirit come to take over his own soul.
Oh, no, it's like the 1993 Augusta Masters all over again.
And the old series to consider for your next Edinburgh show. Basically doing a one-man play. Doing commentary on an entire round of golf at the Amazon course, just zipping around for the highlights. Your emails now, and there's an email here from Joe, who says, Dear Chris, Paul, Andy, and then there's about 35 dots and my name. I don't know why those dots are there. Many beagles back.
It's just build-up, John.
Yeah, or maybe that's
just,
it, yeah.
Just your showbiz build-up.
Oh, that's good. I like that, then. Many Bugles back, circa the time of the Bugle curse, you mentioned several times the official team of the Bugle, which would remain until said team won a game. Well, I have a brand new team for which you Buglemeisters can declare as the official team of the Bugle, Wigan Athletic. First of all, as a Wigan fan myself, I can see many comparisons between this podcast and my beloved football team. It is often observed by a number of people well under its capacity. People leave before the end when things are going badly. We've been a league club for roughly the same amount of time as Andy Zaltzman, and although we try to do things well, like trying to emulate the playing style of Barcelona, we often end up with a sort of beating which not even Miss Nightingale could patch up and smile at. As I'm writing this, we've just been destroyed by the powerhouse that is Blackpool, 4-0. And our next two games are against Chelsea and Tottenham, who beat us 8-0 and 9-1, respectively, last season. For those who do not follow football, that's the equivalent of losing 300-30 at 10-pin bowling, 26-6 in croquet, or having the curling stone dropped on your head in a game of curling. Therefore, I think you have no choice but to make Wigan Athletic the official team of the Bugle. Many regards, Joe, formerly of Leeds, now of Canberra. P.S. Chris, love your hair. What?
That's a bit scary.
Is that saying he loves your hair or just advising you to love your hair?
Oh, that could be it. Chris, love your hair.
Yeah. I will. I actually just had it cut, but thanks anyway.
Well, that's part of loving it. You pruned it, basically. That's probably wise.
I was crying into the mirror.
Well, cruel, I mean, to be kind.
I'm not going to declare Wigan the official team yet, Andy, but I think... Now, if they rack up a really spectacular goal difference, and if they are winless or pointless about 10 games in, then I think we'll start to talk.
I was doing some gigs in Glasgow a few years ago. I went to see a team called East Stirlingshire, who were then bottom of the Scottish professional leagues, and they were on course for having the worst ever season in the history of British league football. They'd had one win and two draws. Also, you know, I saw them lose to Queen's Park in Glasgow in a 50,000-seater stadium with 300 people in it, which was a beautiful day. Apparently the players were paid £10 a game, which I don't know if that counts as professional football, but they heroically stuck at it, and then they blew it, John. The last game of the season, they had 5 points from the whole season of almost 40 games, and then they won their last game, and they did not get the record. And that has got to be one of the greatest chokes in history, when you know... Immortality is that close.
Disaster.
Within your grasp.
Disastrous.
Like the Dolphins the other year.
Yeah, absolutely disastrous. So, yeah, hang in there, Wigan.
This email comes in from Chris Hansen in Plano, Texas. Is that how it's pronounced, John? Plano or Plano? No,
Plano, Andy.
Plano.
Yeah.
Plano, Texas, USA, USA, USA. That's the address he's given there. Uh-huh. And he writes on the subject of a look back. Gentlemen and Andy... You. Rather than practicing my instrument, rather than studying the mathematics I'll be doing next year at college, rather than packing up all of my belongings to move into my dorm at said college, and rather than taking out the recycling, I have done this. This is a good start to an email, John. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This sounds like a man who has really wasted some time.
Yeah.
I've gone through all the issues of the Bugle I have in my possession, that's issues 18 to 123, and calculated the number of seconds that each one lasts. After feeding this data into a spreadsheet, I'm able to tell some nearly interesting things about our performance of late as far as Bugle duration goes. For the purposes of data source uniformity, I have taken data from only full episodes, no supplemental issues, no musical spectaculars, no best of. Episodes with Andy and John present only are counted. I would also accept an episode with only John. Thank you. Oh, you made me feel really special so far in this email. Also, I'm in the middle of an arts festival. I need to be loved.
It's not personal, Andy, it's science.
I need to be loved. Also, for some reason, I'm missing episode 55 and unable to access 1 to 17 because the Times website is now blocking me.
Ooh, so this data is not complete.
No. This sounds like the climate debate all over again, John. 1. Your early period, Bugles 18 to 48, were marked by sudden changes in length with no perceivable trend. As a young podcast, you were mostly trying to figure out who you were and what your likes and dislikes were. Did you prefer a long and drawn-out painful string of puns? Yes. Or a shorter and more powerful one followed by exclamations of BOOM! He knew what was coming this week, John.
Yeah, he did. That's eerily prescient.
Clearly, you opted for the first. 2. Your middle period, brackets and Tom's blue period, Bugles 49 to 98, were marked by a surprising stability. Right. You appeared to have settled into a kind of rhythm and with a relatively steady trend of duration. 3. The period in which you currently find yourself, 98 to 122, you are again in a state of discombobulation. You are experiencing periods of long duration and periods of disappointingly short bugles, such as episode 118, which was a piss-poor 29 minutes. I think we were supposed to be doing 20-minute shows when we started.
Yeah, that's right. I think it was supposed to be 20. So it's already... What does that do to your graph?
Yeah. 4. The most interesting revelation, if indeed you could call it that, is that bugles are, on the whole, getting longer. Oh. The light blue line running through the middle of the series is called the trend line, and it indicates that bugle episodes are getting longer by approximately 4.4134 seconds per bugle, on average. Using these figures, which I barely have the qualifications to call facts, for episode 1000, buglers should be able to expect a bugle with a length of approximately 105 minutes. Kill yourself now, Chris. That's only an average, and they're sure to overrun at least occasionally.
True.
As you are virtually my only source of information on European current events, this news heartens me. When I took a European history class last year, I was able to chime in with the fact that Joanna of Aragon was also known as Joanna the Mad, for reasons which are certainly known to you, as well as the fact that proposed EU treaties have to be ratified by all EU nations, as revealed with your, in inverted commas, coverage of the Lisbon Treaty ratification in Bugle 34.
Oh, God.
Always a pleasure, Chris Hansen.
Well, that is... it's very concerning for a start that you're picking up any information from this podcast. And, too, the actual graph which is attached to that is spectacular. Now, we don't have a website anymore, Andy. Can you tweet pick that?
I'll give it a go, possible? John. I'll see...
So...
I'll try and put it up, John.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be a heroic. It'll be like Scott trying to reach the Antarctic. I'll probably get there and find that some Norwegian guy's already tweeted it. And then die on the way back to my flat. Well, that's it, Buglers. No time for sports this week. Do keep your emails coming in to thebugle@timesonline.co.uk. And more importantly, keep coming to my show, 4:20 in the afternoon in Stand 3. It's got a really funny new joke in. Really, really good one.
Have a lovely week, Buglers.
Bye-bye.
Bye.